On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Ted Cruz wrapping the bacon around the semi-automatic weapon to cook it.
I understand that trade is not a sexy issue.
Nobody knows where the Republican Party is going to land. I mean, it's kind of like a country road. No one knows where it will end.
In many ways, Marco Rubio is the Michael Jordan of American politics.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
This is Which Way LA. I'm Barbara Bogaven for Warren Olney. Pharmaceutical startups are increasingly using drug patent loopholes to jack up prices on old drugs. It's just one example of the wild west of drug pricing. Unlike Europe and Canada, the U.S. doesn't negotiate the price of drugs or provide caps. Are costs out of control and what should be done about it? That's later on To The Point. First, this story. It being the holidays, the state legislature is out for recess until next year, when lawmakers and Governor Jerry Brown will take up some major initiatives. So tonight we're looking ahead to see what lawmakers are planning for the new year and how the shifting power dynamics in Sacramento will play out in those debates. We'll also get you up to date on how and when you can use your Christmas hoverboard, so stay tuned for that. John Myers is the Sacramento Bureau Chief for the LA Times. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Well, let's tackle this balance of powers question first, and I'm thinking a couple of things are perhaps causing them to shift. Term limits changed in 2012, and now lawmakers can serve 12 consecutive years in one chamber rather than having to flip back and forth from House to Senate. So that must mean more veteran lawmakers than I think any time in the last 20 years. Will that significantly change how business gets done in Sacramento in the coming year?
I certainly think it will, and I think it already has started playing out. I mean, I do call them the 12-year bunch. I mean, so they can now serve one seat for 12 years, assuming they get reelected. I think that what it's doing here in Sacramento is it's giving legislators this ability to take longer to become experts on policy. They're taking back some of their political power from staffers and lobbyists. But I think it also may mean some more muscle flexed from the legislative branch of California government when it comes to the governor, Jerry Brown, the executive branch. You know, keep in mind, Jerry Brown is entering his sixth year in this return to Sacramento. Most of these legislators are in a power position, I should say, that'll be there long after he leaves office. I think we are really seeing some shifts here. We started to see a little bit of this this past summer in one of these big fights over this landmark climate change law, SB 350. Governor had one particular viewpoint. The legislators had a different one, at least enough of them did, and the bill had to be revised and weakened in a way that the governor didn't want it to be. And I think that does signal a bit of a shift in the way power works here in Sacramento. I think it's going to be interesting to watch.
And that power shift was headed by moderate Democrats, and they now have new leadership. Are they shaping up to be even more of a power center than before?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, the mods is what they call themselves. I think they're really best defined as business-leaning Democrats, and by that I mean less aligned with liberal interest groups like labor or environmentalists. You know, we've had mods for years, but I think we have more of them now in part because of the top two primary in California, which allows two candidates from the same party to duke it out in November. I think that has empowered centrist Democrats in some ways. So they've got new leadership, as you referenced, co-leaders for 2016. Democrat from Bakersfield and a Democrat from the Sacramento suburbs are going to share that power in the assembly. I think they're going to be very interesting to watch. Most precisely, I think it's going to be really fascinating to see whether moderate Democrats in the legislature have their own policy agenda, things they want to move forward, or whether they're going to keep playing defense, as I would call it, basically killing things that maybe more liberal Democrats want them to pass.
And 2016 is an election year, so how much of a damper do you think that might put on any agenda that's too controversial or unpopular with business, with deep pockets?
Well, I just think it's going to change everything up here. I mean, you know, honestly, let's admit that lawmakers have calendars, and they will easily see that the filing season to run for office in California opens in February, closes as spring hits in California. They're going to know who they're competitors are in the June and November elections, and very quickly in Sacramento. I would say, you know, by the time Easter rolls around, you're going to see people thinking about campaigns in a way that really does influence the policy debate and could change it and could stop a lot of things.
You are not getting me excited about 2016.
It's politics.
Let's move away from power dynamics then to specific issues. The legislature has a lot of unfinished work to do on health care and transportation funding from this year. Both of those topics were left hanging last fall. So what proposals are on the table? And just how contentious do you think those two will shape up to be?
Well, a lot is left on the table, quite frankly. I mean, this all happened in what we called special sessions, except, quite frankly, it wasn't that special. The governor called special legislative sessions on health care funding and one on transportation funding, largely because both of those issues got bogged down in state budget negotiations, and they threatened to delay the budget, and so they moved them into this other procedure called a special session. So what's happened since the summer? Well, I mean, not a lot. Some informational hearings, no real progress. The bottom line here is that what we're talking about are very complex policy choices on funding the state's Medi-Cal program, on new money for the developmentally disabled, on repairing roads and bridges. All of that, though, has landed, honestly, on the T word, taxes. Democrats want new tax revenues to fund some of that. That takes Republican votes in the legislature. Republicans have said no. And that's kind of where we stand. I think the legislature and the governor both have a lot of work to do on those issues in 2016. And as I said, people are mindful that it's an election year. It's going to be hard.
Well, on top of a lot of existing legislation, there's always top-of-the-headline controversies that lawmakers leap to address. And two of those on the slate for next year are what to do about mass shooting events like San Bernardino and this huge environmental mess of the Porter Ranch gas leak. So first, who's putting forward anything on gun control?
Well, I think you're going to see something on both. Obviously, San Bernardino was a very monumental moment, not only in the fabric of California, but in the political fabric, I think, as well. So we're hearing a little bit about efforts to come back to the issue of guns when the legislature returns. State Senate Leader Kevin De Leon has said he may reinvigorate some of the efforts he's had over the last few years on background checks for buying ammunition or the size and use of ammunition clips. And by the way, we're also seeing efforts on that particular issue and those ideas from Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, who has a ballot measure he wants to put on the November ballot next year. And then Mike Gatto, Assemblyman from Southern California, from the L.A. area, has been talking about perhaps we need limits on guns for people who are on those federal no-fly lists, and has said he will introduce legislation to that effect when lawmakers come back here to Sacramento. I call these ripped from the headlines, and I think deservedly so in some ways, when the news influences where people are talking in ways that maybe life and policy should change in California, lawmakers pay attention to that.
And Porter Ranch?
Yeah, and Porter Ranch is one that is still ongoing. I mean, we have seen in the last couple of weeks, we've seen one of the leading environmentalists in the legislature, State Senator Fran Pavley from Agoura Hills, where Porter Ranch is in her universe down there in her district, has talked about maybe we need to take another look at some of the oil and gas issues there, and maybe do some informational work and maybe some legislation. So again, I think these things are going to be top of the mind, and I certainly think the governor's going to get questions about that as well, given it's his administration that is responding in a lot of ways to the Porter Ranch issue.
Okay, so those are long-term and long debates, but right on January 1st, people better be ready to stop wearing earbuds when they're driving, right, or riding their bikes. Now, wasn't that always the case, that you couldn't have both earbuds in your ears? You had to take one out?
Apparently. I mean, you know, these are those things that technology has a way of getting far ahead of laws, right? So, I mean, state law has already said that you couldn't wear headphones in both ears while you're riding a bike or you're driving. But the law didn't use the word earbuds.
Because they hadn't been made yet.
Right. So the legislature added the word earbud, which I guess is a little bit of a loophole in a new law. And there are some exceptions for emergency responders or those with hearing aids. But, you know, these are things that are kind of law enforcement kinds of things. There's not a state bureaucracy to see whether or not you've got an earbud. I mean, again, if the CHP saw you with it, I guess that would be trouble.
And all those hoverboards and electric bikes that we all got for Christmas, should we talk to a lawyer before we use them?
Well, I think you should probably talk to one if you want to see all the things that are going on. Social media is full of all these people who are having hoverboard accidents, but that's another topic. The new law that was passed in the legislature in 2015 said that hoverboards are legal But there are restrictions. You can't hoverboard while you're under the influence. That's a good idea. You got to be 16 or older to ride one. You've got to wear a helmet if you're on public property. Some speed restrictions. College campuses can set up their rules. I think that this is, you know, people should look at this as a framework for something, again, as technology changes. And on electric bicycles, you mentioned, there's a new law that says you've got to be 16 years old again. You got to wear a helmet. Based on the speed of the bike, if it's a faster one, you got to have more precaution. So again, technology is driving politics in some ways.
You know, we mentioned, on a more serious note, we mentioned earlier proposed gun legislation, but California did push through some, which goes into effect come January 1st, right? What changes should we know about?
Yeah, a couple of ones there that people have talked about. There's a new law on the books in California that says there can be no concealed weapons on college campuses and K through 12 school campuses, which a lot of people have supported. Was negotiated a lot in the legislature in 2015 with concerns on all sides there. That predated the, for example, the Oregon college campus shootings, but no doubt that was on the minds of many now in California as they're starting to see this take effect. And then also, we've got a law that goes into effect that is directly influenced by something that happened in California, that mass shooting in Isla Vista a couple of years ago. And so we've got a law on the books that says family members can get a restraining order from a court that would temporarily keep somebody from having a gun if they think that relative is at a risk of committing an act of violence. And again, very much seen out of what happened in Isla Vista and the young man involved there and his family. So those both go on the books in California effective January 1st.
Well, John Myers, thank you so much for getting us up to date, and I wish you a very happy New Year.
Always happy to do it, and happy New Year to you.
Sacramento Bureau Chief for the LA Times, John Myers. Thanks so much again. And in a moment, a new year, a new day for workers seeking fair pay. New state wage laws go into effect in 2016. That's next on Which Way LA.
Subscribe to the Which Way LA podcast at kcrw.com or download the KCRW app, available anywhere podcasts are found and on all mobile devices.
This is Which Way LA. I'm Barbara Bogave. The fight for a fair wage continues in 2016 when the state raises its minimum wage once again up to $10 an hour. But women in particular have cause to celebrate next year. California will now have one of the toughest equal pay laws in the country. Sylvia Allegretto is here to tell us about changes in the state's wage laws set to take effect January 1st. She's an economist and co-director of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Barbara.
Well, first to this bump in the state's minimum wage. It's the second one in the last 18 months. It goes from $9 to $10 this time. So that's higher than the federal minimum of $7.25, but it's still quite low, right? Los Angeles is aiming for $15 an hour by 2020. So how should we think about California's progress on the minimum wage and fair pay, given just how expensive it is to live in this state?
Yeah, those are really great points. I mean, the $7.25 an hour, which is the federal minimum wage and hasn't been changed since 2009, is woefully inadequate for the country, let alone an expensive state like California. And like you said, in even more expensive areas within the state, such as L.A. and San Francisco, even here in Oakland and where I am in Berkeley, there are even higher minimum wages. They're all around $12 or above. So the state going from $9 to $10 is a good move. California, for much of the minimum wage histories, that history of state minimum wages being higher than the federal, has been on the forefront for most of that history. And so they remain very active. But I do think that we can go to $10 an hour, very easy, without having much of the negative employment effects that people always hear about and the negative effects in general, because people have to realize that, for instance, the $8 minimum wage that was in effect before the increase to $9 was in effect for 6.5 years. So every year that minimum wage gets eroded a little more, right? The buying power falls far behind. So especially when you put it in historical context about a minimum wage that is left to kind of just, you know, be in at one level for a long period of time, this is a good move, a positive move, but it's not like an overwhelmingly bold move.
Well, going from $8 to $10 an hour, has that had a significant economic effect on the state's coffers?
Well, it's a little too early to tell, really, because you have to have some lag time to get all the good data in so you can do a rigorous, incredible economic analysis. But certainly what we've seen, and part of this is the business cycle, too, is that it hasn't hurt the state. The state is finally coming out of the Great Recession, even though wages for most other workers, except these minimum wage workers, hasn't really budged, which is a pretty interesting story on its own, that low-wage workers are getting a bit of a boost because of these policies, where the typical worker, their wages really haven't gone anywhere, even though we're seeing some bright spots in the most recent months.
And pulling back the lens a little bit, where is the minimum wage movement right now in California? Is there still momentum? Was it a strictly partisan issue in Sacramento, and will it follow along those lines?
Well, there is some momentum. I mean, people have been kicking around the idea, legislators putting a $13 minimum wage for the state that would be better than $10. That's Senator Leno, I think, put that bill out. Some are talking about a $15 minimum wage just because that is kind of the buzzword these days because of the fast food workers asking for $15. I think $13 is a real legitimate debate going on right now, if the state should actually think about moving beyond the $10, because now this is the second phase in of two, so there's no more increases that are slated for California. So we would have to have more debate and action on that front. And of course, there's groups trying to get some get a measure on the ballot for 2016. So it could also pass by ballot initiative.
Okay, let's move on to wage equality bill SB 358. It's being hailed as a milestone. So what protections does it ensure for equal pay?
Well, this bill really is one of the stronger bills in the country, I believe, now one of the stronger laws in the land. But they're really hard to enforce because one of the issues that we have, and this might be U.S. specific, you know, that we have a custom pretty much or a norm that people don't actually discuss their pay. So what this bill, one of the things that this bill is trying to do is bring pay, above the board. So people know what their coworkers are making. People know what other people that are in the same position that they're in are earnings. Because right now, and what's been happening for many, many decades, is we just have no clue. And because workers find it uncomfortable actually to talk amongst themselves, they don't. And then it becomes really hard to know what somebody that's in the same position as you or in a lower position or in the same position, but maybe not for as many years, you just have no idea if they're making more, less, or the same. So it's about kind of bringing the information to the forefront so people can really understand, and then also putting, you know, laws in place where, you know, the owners and businesses have to share this information if employees want to know about it.
So this is how it broadens existing laws? Because there were already laws on the books in California and federal government banning employers from paying women less than men
right,
for the same jobs.
And it is broadening. And like I said, this is a very hard law. In general, these laws are hard to enforce, which is why we see, for instance, women continually making less than men, even for the same job. We see this from the bottom of the pay scale to middle of the pay scale to very high end of the pay scale. So even women with a lot of education, a lot of experience, matter of fact, those gender pay gaps grow because you have more room to move because there's more money involved. So it's not something that even education can protect women from.
Well, the law also prohibits employer retaliation, right, against employees who who discuss wages with coworkers.
Whether you discuss wages with coworkers, yes.
But that's often so hard for employees to prove that it's retaliation. So does the law address that as well?
Yeah, well, it's supposedly making this, again, a stronger stance on opening the books, on information, and so people aren't fired for talking about this, because, you know, this really, this silence around the issue of pay has really benefited companies, because they're saving, you know, over the life of a woman working, they're paying her less. That's saving some companies a lot of money. So they've benefited from this silence, and so there is probably going to be some pushback, although I have read about some companies definitely, you know, checking their books, seeing who's paid what is their position, to try to get ahead of the curve on this. So there will be some good actors, which is good news. But in general, it's very difficult for workers to know where they stand amongst their equal coworkers.
Well, this law also opens the way for more lawsuits. And critics say this will be one more reason for companies to think twice about coming to California, or even to pick up and leave. Are there precedents to support those kinds of allegations?
I'm not sure about any lawsuits, but, you know, California is on the forefront of education and technology breakthroughs, so companies want to be in California. So I'm not too worried because of this bill that companies will leave, especially if they are at all concerned with fairness, which a lot of companies actually are, you know, that this will be a good thing for women, it'll be a good thing for workers. I you know, it doesn't mean it won't happen that, you know, some company might decide not to come here because of this law, but I just doubt that it's going to be much of an issue.
Sylvia Allegretto is an economist and co-director of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you, Barbara.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Coming up, pharmaceutical companies are increasingly using drug patent laws to jack up prices on all drugs. And it's just one example of the Wild West of drug pricing, where the free market reigns and the U.S. government doesn't negotiate or provide caps. Is the system working? And if not, who will go up against Big Pharma to change it? That's coming up on To the Point.